It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Europe seeks global cooperation in fighting terrorism. The European Union has launched an effort to boost international anti-terrorism cooperation by increasing its intelligence sharing. In the aftermath of deadly attacks in France and Belgium, EU foreign ministers meeting Monday in Brussels, along with the Arab League's Secretary General. Afterwards, EU Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini said the EU will be sharing information on suspected terrorists, possible attacks with many countries throughout the Arab world, Africa, and Asia.
We signed a memorandum of understanding to strengthen our cooperation and to make sure that our cooperation is carried out on a more structured, regular basis on a series of issues.
Europe remains on edge after Belgium's justice minister said the alleged mastermind in last week's foiled terror attack remains at large. Earlier, two terror attacks in Paris killed 17, including 12 at the Charlie Hebdo magazine. The UN Security Council Monday expressed deep concern over attacks by the Islamic militant group Boko Haram. The 15-member council welcomed a summit in Niger's capital scheduled today on the matter, and Chad's recent deployment of troops to assist Cameroon. Ghana's President John Mahama spoke about that during a meeting with Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin.
I'm encouraged by the news I received that Chad has moved troops into Cameroon to support Cameroon, but I believe that we should do this on a more structured basis, get a mandate from the AU to form a regional force that has an operational plan to be able to deal with the issue of security in northeastern Nigeria. Because terrorism, as we all know, affects the whole of the world.
On Sunday, Boko Haram fighters captured dozens of hostages in Cameroon, but Monday, military officials said at least two dozen had been freed. This is VOA News. Niger has declared 3 days of mourning following violent protests over the publication of a cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad by the French satirical publication Charlie Hebdo. At least 10 people were killed and dozens wounded in separate protests Friday and Saturday. At least 45 churches burned to the ground. A blast outside a courthouse in the eastern Ukraine city of Kharkiv Monday wounded at least 12 people. The explosion coming just after supporters of the Ukrainian nationalist Svoboda Party left the building where a party member was on trial. Earlier Monday, Ukraine's Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk told reporters there is indisputable evidence Russia continues sending military personnel and equipment to support separatists. Iran says one of its generals was killed in an airstrike in Syria attributed to the Israeli military. General Mohammad al-Dadi, a former brigade commander in the Revolutionary Guard, died in the attack Sunday along with six members of the Lebanese Shia group Hezbollah. Israel has not confirmed the alleged airstrike. Schools across Guinea, shuttered since the Ebola outbreak of last year, reopened on Monday. Sayo Avoko is a UNICEF specialist in Conakry.
All the teachers from pre-primary to university, about 80,000 teachers are trained about the protocol for the safe opening of the schools, about what to do in school to keep the school as safe as possible. We also distributed about 48,000 hygiene kits. That's a hand washing station at school. And we also distributed about 20,000 infrared thermometers to take the temperatures of the school.
The West African country, where the Ebola epidemic was first detected nearly a year ago, has experienced its lowest weekly total of confirmed new cases since August. A senior U.S. official says the U.S. is prepared to accelerate the pace of engagement with Cuba and expand the number of areas in which it is in the best interest of both countries to cooperate. Speaking ahead of historic talks in Havana scheduled Wednesday, the official said Washington will continue to work on ways to improve diplomatic ties and migration procedures. Heavy rains have produced flooding and misery for people across Malawi, Mozambique, and Madagascar, where well over 200 have died. Hundreds of thousands have been forced from their homes. Rivers have burst their banks, flooding vast areas, destroying homes, bridges, and crops. Zambia holds a presidential election today, a special ballot to replace the late Michael Sata, who died at a London hospital in October. 11 candidates are vying for the top job. The winner will serve out Mr. Sata's term until September 2016. A UN agency warned global unemployment will rise over the next 5 years, leaving more than 200 million people jobless by 2019. A new report by the International Labor Organization cites the tepid world economic recovery since the 2008 recession. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambians are voting today in special presidential election.
I think the democratic process in Zambia is very vibrant, and everybody knows that the only way to choose leaders is through the ballot. And I can see that the whole country is very excited about this, that they are ready to cast their ballot.
Irene Mambilima is chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. We'll have analysis of the leading candidates in today's balloting. The International Labour Organization warns of further rise in global unemployment, and the DRC government crushed Monday's anti-Kabila protests.
We know that in Congolese law, it is strictly forbidden to violate the parliament headquarters. Police is deployed also there to stop anybody to enter the parliament with these objectives.
Lambert Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. Meanwhile, the opposition has called for a national strike today, Tuesday. And South Sudan's government said its year-long civil war has spread to another state. Those stories plus Marco Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The chairperson of Zambia's Electoral Commission says democracy in her country is vibrant, and the only way that the citizens know to change their government is through the ballot box. Irene Mambilima's comments come as Zambians go to the polls today, Tuesday, in a special election to choose a successor to President Michael Sata, who died last October. She said her commission has everything in place for today's vote.
We are very ready. We have all the materials, and by close of today, we shall deliver them to the polling stations in readiness for tomorrow. The stations will open at around 6 in the morning and close at 6 p.m.
Was the time enough for campaigning after the president died?
Well, according to our constitution, once we lose the president, the election must be conducted within 90 days. That is hardly enough time, I think, for anybody to campaign. But I think they have done their best. We did roll out an election timetable, which put the campaign period. But I can see that all the parties have been busy campaigning. They have been crisscrossing the country to sell their candidates.
Coming into the election, there were all this confusion, violence. How is your commission dealing with this?
On the issues of violence, we have appealed to the various political parties to cage their cadres to be peaceful during the campaigns. I'm glad to say that the leadership of the political parties have been very supportive. We have met with them a number of times and urged them really to tackle the issue of violence. But still more, we see a few pockets here and there where the political cadres, especially of the ruling party and UPND, going at each other. But otherwise, the rest of the country is peaceful, and we haven't had any adverse reports so far.
What about security?
Security, we are in touch with the police. They are the ones who police the elections. So far, they have worked very well, and we expect that they work very well. We shall have police officers in the polling stations, but these are not armed, just to keep law and order and to make sure that people are ordered in the queue. But the police have assured us that the ability to respond to any situation that may arise during the election and indeed even during the compilation of results and after.
You know, madam, people talk about electronic voting. Is Zambia introducing that, or do you have it?
We have no electronic voting in Zambia. According to our regulations, the counting is done at the polling station, and at the end of the count, each political party candidate, because they are present during the count, they will get a copy of the results of the poll at that polling station, and one copy will be pasted after the polling station for the benefit of the members of the public.
What would you want to say about the whole democratic process in Zambia?
I think the democratic process in Zambia is very vibrant, and everybody knows that the only way to choose leaders is through the ballot. And I can see that the whole country is very excited about this, that they are ready to cast their ballots.
Irene Mambilima is chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Isaac Mwanza is the Democracy and Governance Advisor at the Young African Leaders Initiative in Zambia. He says the two leading candidates among 11 are Defense Minister Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hishileman of the Opposition United Party for National Development, the UPND. Mwanza also said Zambia's economy, particularly the country's copper mining industry, is center stage in today's election.
The entire election that we're having today is bordering on the two candidates who are the leading figures. One candidate from the ruling Patriotic Front, who's Honorable Edgar Lungu, is also a Minister of Justice. He is also holding another position as Minister of Defense in the current government. He's running on the basis of the fact that the ruling party and the late president had a vision. He has repeatedly stated that he has no vision of his own and would like to finish the mandate that President Sata had when he was elected in 2001 to ensure that all the programs that they started could be delivered and could be achieved within a period of 5 years, which is provided in our constitution. So, on the other hand, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, who is the opposition United Party for National Development, he has a long history as an economic manager, having started his career at 26 years old when he was able to run his own company and succeed in business. And he's one of the leaders that people think that he can turn around the economy, which has not been very stable.
I know Zambia is a mining country. Copper mining is Zambia. To what degree now this economy is going to play a pivotal role in this election and the mining industry particularly?
Yes, the mines are playing a very critical role in the economy of the country. The paradox of the mines is that our citizens are divided on the issue of the taxes that the mines are paying. Others think that the mines are not paying enough taxes to the Zambian government and that the Zambian people are not getting a fair share from the mines. But at the same time, the mining owners are saying a lot of Zambians have been employed, and it is true that these mines have employed a lot of Zambians and a source of capital, of revenue for the Zambian government. So it is a question of a balance on what needs to be done for Zambians to get a fair share from the mines, as opposed to the current system where all the profits that the mines are getting is getting externalized to other countries.
Isaac Mwanza is the Democracy and Governance Advisor at the Young African Leaders Initiative in Zambia. You're speaking with me from Lusaka. The South Sudan government says fighting in the year-long civil war has spread to another state. A spokesman for the army says clashes erupted in Lake State on Monday and blamed the violence on rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. But the rebels say they have no knowledge of any fighting in Lake State. Wakit Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says rebel forces deliberately allowed fighting in Unity State to spill over into neighboring Lake State.
The rebel crossed the borders of Unity State. They came from the southern part of Unity State and trying to transport the fighting into Lake by attacking Maper.
Aguer said fighting was still ongoing in the village of Maper when he spoke to South Sudan in Focus. He did not have any casualty figures from the clashes. A spokesman for Machar's rebel group, Lulu Rwai Kwang, says he has not heard of any fighting in Lakes or Unity States.
To be sincere, I have no information that is directly linking our forces with the clashes, and therefore do not want to claim responsibility at this point in time until I get in touch with our field commander.
UN-run Radio Miraya reports that several houses were burnt down and an unspecified number of civilians killed in the clashes. The latest fighting comes hot on the heels of clashes in the village of Ondolwich in the northeastern part of Upper Nile State. Aguer says Machar's rebel forces started the fighting in Ondolwich, which is in Ren County, located in the strategic border region with the Sudan.
The fighting took place from 11 in the morning up to afternoon. The SPLA defeated the attack and pursued them up to the borders where they dispersed into two groups. One group crossed the border to the Sudan, and the SPLA stopped at the borders of South Sudan. The other group that have run toward east, toward Nasir, is part of the group that was dispersed after the attack on Delhi.
But Kwang says the SPLA and a Sudan-based rebel group are responsible for the classes.
Over the weekend, government troops supported by fighters from SPLA now attacked our forces at Omdelewich. We fought for over 4 hours. During the first engagement, they had an upper hand and they were able to capture 4 of our wounded fighters. But in the afternoon, we were able to repulse them and kill 189, including 7 fighters from SPLA North.
Aguirre says the SPLA also discovered a rebel storage facility near Jamam Village in Maban County in Upper Nile State. He says it contained around 1,000 rocket-propelled grenades, ammunition, and green uniforms that are believed to have come from Sudan. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 20th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister says security forces acted to disrupt Monday's protest because it is illegal under Congolese law to interfere with the work of parliament. Vital Kamari, leader of Congo's third largest party, the Union for the Congolese Nation, along with other opposition parties, have urged Kinshasa residents to occupy parliament on Monday to prevent a debate on a proposed legislation that would delay presidential and parliamentary elections beyond late 2016. Information Minister Lambert Mende also said police acted to clear the streets for Monday's visit of Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos. We spoke with Minister Mende early Monday before the protest got underway.
What we know is that the police personnel are deployed in some part of Kinshasa because we are waiting a very important delegation from Angola, headed by His Excellency José Eduardo dos Santos himself, the head of state of Angola. And as usual, we have deployed police personnel in the road he will take from airport to any place. He will be in meeting with our government today. This is not for impeaching anybody to move or what. Secondly, we have had some information, some leaflets from opposition, 2 or 3 opposition parties, calling upon their member to come and occupy the parliament in order to stop parliament to work. When we know that in Congolese law, it is strictly forbidden to violate the parliament headquarters, police is deployed also there to stop anybody to enter the parliament with this objective. But people are free to move where they want, anywhere they want, to demonstrate if they have already coordinated with police. I think that the office, the headquarters of Mr. Kamere's party, is near the parliament. And the police is there not for his office, not for his party, not for himself, but to protect the parliament as according to the law.
Does your president, Joseph Kabila, do you fear Mr. Kamere in terms of whether he might run for president?
You know, Mr. Kamere is free to run for president. He did it in 2011 and they came out with 7%. So I don't think that it is somebody we can fear, as Mr. Tshisekedi, who came with more than 40%. So it is not a matter of being a candidate for presidency. They were 32 against Mr. Kabila. So why only Kamere? And Kabila is not candidate. He did not announce that he will be running for the 2016 elections. So why all this dramatization?
Lambert Mende is Information Minister for the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Opposition protesters are calling for a national strike in the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa. Today, Tuesday, demonstrators clashed with police forces on Monday when opposition parties took to the streets to voice their resistance to a proposed change in the law that would require a national consensus before the next presidential elections. Kambale Musavuli, a spokesperson for the U.S.-based advocacy group Friends of the Congo, tells Ricky Shryak that the proposed change will most likely delay elections and extend current President Joseph Kabila's term.
The population across the country received a call from the opposition leaders to protest the attempt of the current government to stay in power, specifically speaking of the President Kabila staying in power beyond his term limit. His second term of presidency comes to an end in December of 2016, and there's supposed to be elections to be held in 2016 to have a new president. On Saturday, the parliament met and the lower house voted for the new electoral law, which has a stipulation that may extend President Kabila's term limit. The electoral law calls for a census before the presidential election in 2016. Congo is the size of Western Europe with a lack of infrastructure. It's easily predictable that a national census in Congo will take more than a year. That means that having that clause, it automatically increase the term limits of the current president, Kabila. So the opposition asked the population to come out, and they responded in mass, hundreds to thousands of people in Kinshasa when in the streets, demanding that Kabila leaves power.
There have been reports that two people were killed. You guys have had confirmation that that is true?
Yes, unfortunately, two young people have been shot and killed. I'm just reminded of the challenge that posed whenever people voice their concern with the government. But the Congolese people are resolute. The numbers that I've seen in the streets, the way these forces were coordinated across the country.
That was Kambale Munsavule, spokesperson for the U.S.-based advocacy group Friends of the Congo. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Ferguson, Missouri. A new report by the International Labour Organization says more than 212 million people around the world will be out of work by 2019. This is up from the current 201 million unemployed. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the ILO's World Employment and Social Outlook Trends in 2015 report in Geneva.
The International Labour Organization reports more than 61 million jobs have been lost since the start of the global economic crisis in 2008. And because of tepid recovery, unemployment levels will rise until the end of the decade. The ILO warns unemployment combined with widening inequalities could lead to growing turbulence in many societies. It says a likely trigger for social unrest will be young people between the ages of 15 and 24, who are three times more likely to be unemployed than adults. In 2014, youth unemployment was almost 13%. ILO head of research, Raymond Torres, says there is an undeniable link between social unrest and the labor market.
We have done an analysis which actually very much follows what has been done in other organizations like the IMF that shows that there is a link between inequalities and the ability for economies to rebound, to recover. In high inequality countries, it is more difficult to rebound than in low inequality countries.
The report finds improved employment in the United States and Japan, but adds unemployment remains high in many advanced economies, particularly in Europe. It notes three-quarters of the world's vulnerable employment, those who are self-employed or are unpaid family workers, are in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. The ILO says Sub-Saharan Africa has the highest rate of working poverty and vulnerable employment across all regions. It says the Ebola virus in West Africa has had a significant toll on Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says 319 million workers, one out of 10 globally, are in extreme poverty, earning less than $1.25 a day.
And though those figures have come down in recent years, the rate of decline has been retarded quite significantly in the period of the crisis. Notwithstanding all of that, it's worth noting as well that the global middle class continues to grow. And we define that global middle class as those enjoying a consumption level of between $4 and $13 per capita per day. They make up now 34% of total employment in the developing world.
The report says the employment outlook has deteriorated in the Arab region and parts of Latin America and the Caribbean. It says employment prospects in many advanced economies and several Asian countries may improve if the steep decline in oil and gas prices is sustained. But it notes labor markets will suffer in oil and gas-producing countries, especially in Latin America, Africa, and the Arab region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. Senegal fought from a goal down to edge Ghana 2-1 in Mongomo on Monday. Then in a similar fashion, Algeria rallied from behind to defeat South Africa 3-1 in the other Group C tie. Meanwhile, South Africa's coach Ephraim Sheikh Mashaba is positive they'll bounce back in subsequent matches. He's satisfied with their performance.
The biggest mistake we've made, we went to sleep after scoring one goal. But if you look at that, we're still a better side. We created a lot of chances that we couldn't score. It does happen always. If you don't take your chances, you'll be in trouble. But truly speaking, our boys played very well. The second goal that we should have scored, a penalty, that took a steam out of us. And then now we got lost. Nobody know where to stay, where to pick up, and where to look, to clear. We will work on these mistakes. We are aware of what went wrong. We will definitely fix that. Yes, we've got two games to go. We need to make sure we win. But we have seen we were playing against the number one in Africa, but we exposed them. The only thing we lacked that just hold on into that goal. We were no more solid. We were scattered all over the park, especially the right back and the left back. We allowed them to stretch us, and they played wide behind us, and they're always coming down the line, and they played crosses, and which was difficult for us to defend. It will definitely make the nation happy in the last two games.
That was Sheikh Mashaba, South Africa's head coach, speaking in Mongomo. In Malabo, the Confederation of African Football Secretary General Hicham El Amrani is satisfied that all 16 teams have settled well for the tournament. He explains.
They do have places to stay. Of course, they have different standards. They are not the same whether you're in Malabo or whether you're in Ebebin. But this is the reality of the infrastructure that we have. But those infrastructures allowed us to host all the teams correctly. It is true that in one or two cases, the start was a bit harsh because all the conditions were maybe not met when the teams arrived, but this is what we have corrected with the local organizing committee. And today, all the key essentials are being met, even if we're still working to make those requirements even better, whether in terms of transport or housing and so on.
That was Hicham El Amrani, the Confederation of African Football Secretary General, speaking in Malabo. Finally, attention shifts to Group D in the capital Malabo today, Tuesday. Ivory Coast plays Guinea before Mali engages Cameroon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Just a listener mail for this Tuesday morning, January 20th.
Yeah, you permit me to call on the attention of our contestants under two great parties in Nigeria, which are APC and PDP, that the kind of insulting word they are using throughout their campaign is not welcome in democracy. We should adopt the policy of decorum and civility in campaigning rather than using an insulting word. I'm Sudeman Jamata calling from Gogolada, Abuja, APC, Nigeria. Thank you, Yuri.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that's it for this Tuesday, January 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Owoma, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we honor the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with a look at the quest for human rights, justice, and dignity in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the world. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Celebrate.
celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.